This will be the last episode of it. Psalm 89, 34, 35, I covered that about God never breaking his covenant. He swore it to God, said he swore it to David, said he never would break it. That was in Psalm 89, 34, 35. Then in Hebrews 6, 16 through 20, I went through and showed how God himself took an oath and said, I'm not going to break this covenant. But what does that mean? It means that God will never leave me, never forsake me. That there's nothing I can do that God would consider bad enough to break his covenant and send me to hell. And a lot of people that I've talked to in other churches that don't believe like we do in Secure the Believer, they say, well, if that's true, then how do you keep people in church? Love. Love. They love God because he did that for them. And so these people that are afraid, if you don't constantly tell people they're going to hell if they don't do this and don't do that, they keep them in church out of fear, not out of a love for God. I serve God because I love him, because of what he did for me. And the promises that he made are so secure. In Psalm 89, 36, 37, I've already covered this, about his seed, Christ, enduring forever. His throne is the sun before me. It shall be established forever as the moon, a faithful witness in heaven. And we went through all that in great detail. And we went all the way down to, well, my goodness, I think I've got this mixed up here. Well, we covered all that. Those of you on the tape, I'm talking to myself at the present time. Well, we covered Malachi 4, 1 through 3, and we went through all that. And it all tied in with God's assurance that he wouldn't leave us or forsake us. And we came right down to this. After all of these promises, God telling us, don't worry, I'll never leave you and I'll never forsake you. Now, I've had a great life. I had a great mother. I had wonderful grandparents. I married a wonderful, special person. I've had seven kids, and I don't want to talk about that. And I have 13 grandchildren, and I don't want to talk about that either. No, I love all my children and my grandchildren. I've had a great life, and it's been exciting. It's been wonderful. I had a 1935 Ford. That first car I ever had was a Model A. What a thrill to buy a Model A out of a junkyard and take it home, overhaul the engine, learn how to do it, and have a Model A to drive around town. It was a coupe. And then I had a 1935 Ford stripped down. So stripped it didn't even have a brace on the steering wheel. I mean, you could see everything exposed. And I could outrun any police car in town. You say, well, Brother McElmurray, that was a terrible life. At that age, it was a wonderful, marvelous life. Well, I look back on it now, and it was horrible, of course. But I've had a great, great life. 70 years on this earth. If I die tonight, great. Great. I've had a wonderful life. And now, I've got something to look forward to that's a whole lot better. God's promised me I'm going to heaven. That's settled. I've learned how to serve him. I reverentially fear God. Make no mistake about it. And I have a fear if I do something real bad, I'm going to get punished in the flesh for it. So I reverentially fear God. But I don't fear hell. I don't fear the condemnation of God. I don't fear not going to heaven. I know God's promise is secure. Now, the hardest thing that I had as a youth was to ever transfer my thought process to the realization that one day I'd be living on this earth with Jesus Christ for 1,000 years. Right, Ashley? You don't think about stuff like that. I mean, you got school, you got cheerleading, you got football players. You've got one day a Prince Charming is going to come riding along on a white horse, and you're going to disappear into the sunset and live forever. And so when you're that age, you don't think about stuff like that, do you? You think about giving sugar to your grandma, staying on her good side, so she'll give you good stuff to eat. Yeah, I'm aware of what you're up to. I did the same thing. I could make my grandmother eat out of my hands. Just give her a little sugar, she'll do anything you want. You know that, don't you? Yeah. Well, life's great. It's wonderful. Now, I'm going to be in another place. For the first time, I'm going to get to see Jesus. And we've got a millennial reign to go through. It's hard sometimes in the Bible to distinguish between the millennial reign and the final heaven age. In the millennial reign, we'll be on this earth in glorified bodies. We won't have sex anymore. We won't have marital relationships anymore. The love that we have and compassion that we have for one another is going to be outflowing, genuine, no hypocrisy, no guile, no saying one thing to somebody's face and really inwardly hating them. None of that jazz. It's going to be wonderful. And I'm looking forward to that. And this first part that he talks about is a part of the promise. We always tend to think about this horrible tribulation. Ye shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes on the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this. But he says that one day the Son of Righteousness, Jesus Christ, is going to come back with healing in his wings, and all of us will grow up as calves of the stall. You ever see young calves? After, when they're first born, they're a mess. A gooey, ooey mess. Look like they're wrapped in some kind of mucus. And finally, after they get all cleaned up and their mother's licked them, they wander around and wobble and very uncertain. But after maybe a few weeks, man alive, usually calving comes in about the same time, and you got these young calves and they're just jumping around and prancing, and you've never seen anything like it in your life. Happy, they don't care, they got grass, they got mama, they got milk, they got everything they want, and they're perfectly happy, and they just jump around and look for somebody else to run around and play with. It's a wonderful time of life. That's what the initial stages of the millennial reign are going to be like. We're just going to be running around, and we're going to be having a great time. It's going to be so exciting because we've never seen anything like it. And we'll have the same mind we have now, except it won't be carnal anymore. We won't have evil thoughts. We won't be suspicious of one another. We won't be concerned about anything. There will be, with our Lord, in a millennial reign, in a new body, and comparatively, we'll be like calves. Not a care in the world. A calf, there's his milk supply hanging down under the udders, hanging down there. There it is. I got all I need here. And when he learns to eat grass, he's got plenty of that. Just prancing around and jumping up and down. If we learn in life to really understand that God's promises are true, the moment that people die, their soul goes to be with the Lord. It's a terrible thing for us because their soul is what we used to. The soul is made up of the spirit and the soul itself, the heart of man. When you talk about man's heart, it's his soul and his spirit. When God saves you, he gives you a new spirit, perfect spirit. Doesn't sin. But you've got the flesh you live in, sins all the time. Doesn't know how to do anything but sin. Totally self-centered. Says one thing about doing this for a noble cause, but really there's an ulterior motive in the background. And just utterly corrupt and sinful. And there you are, the soul that God has sealed inside with the spirit. The devil can't get to it, and your soul is going to heaven. Well, when a person dies, their soul goes immediately into heaven. Their body goes to the grave. And we're there at the grave, and we're mourning their loss, and we're looking at the body, and we're remembering all the wonderful things about them, the life we had with them. It's a time of great tragedy and sorrow. But it relieves us. At a funeral, people ought to grieve. They ought to grieve. And they shouldn't be ashamed to shed tears. It's a relief. It's a mechanism God built into this body. But at the same time, for believers, that person is in heaven. He's there. He's alive. He's a soul. He or she can see, taste, touch, feel, and hear. And they're in a spiritual kingdom. They have never in their lives, in their entire existence, been so happy. I can't think for them because the Bible doesn't tell much of what they say or what they think. It just puts them there. But I'm going to speculate, make a guess. I would imagine they're thinking, oh my, why did I want to hold on to that life so much? And I would imagine they're thinking, I wish I could tell my loved ones how great this is here. I wish I could just tell them. There's an example given of a rich man who went to hell. And he wanted Lazarus to be sent by God to tell his brothers, lest they ended up in this place. So there is a concern for the people who are left behind. In the case of those who die with their faith in Jesus, I'm sure they want to tell those left behind. It's great. I'm okay. Oh, I wish you were here. Now, maybe I'm putting words in their mouth, but that's what I believe. And so when I do a funeral, I'm acutely aware of that. And I pray for the people that are there, that somehow, some way, they'll be able to grasp that it's not just saying, oh, I know she's better off. I know he's better off. But they have no idea how true and how marvelous that is for the person. Now, when the millennial reign rolls around, that means the rapture will have already occurred, and we'll all be up there together. Now, I don't expect to run around all my life, going over and repairing Mom's house when it needs repair, going down to see good old Mom and tell her how much I love her. And Mom's not going to spend all her time raising a little old tadpole like me and telling me how much she loves me. Won't have to tell each other. We'll know it. All of us will have assignments and jobs. We'll see our loved one. It'll be a wonderful time. Now, this is what this is talking about here in the millennium. Isaiah 66, 22 through 24. Now, the first thing the Lord does here, he talks about the final heaven age. This is not the millennium. At the end of the tribulation period, Jesus comes, brings all the saints with him, establishes a millennial reign, and we get to be on this earth for 1,000 years. It's hard to believe, but it's the truth. And I'll get to see Thelma, and the Lord will put her together with 2,684 women who are able to speak with propensity and at the rate that she does, and for 1,000 years they'll get set and talk to each other. Thelma, it's going to be wonderful. You'll love it. And Charlie, they'll isolate us from all these women so we can sit around and think about things that are important. Right, Charlie? For as the new heavens and the new earth. Now, the new heavens and the new earth are what God's going to create at the end of the millennial reign. And this is the eternal kingdom where the heavenly city, the New Jerusalem, comes down out of earth, 3/5 the size of the United States. But this is past the millennium. Now, he says, for as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, now remember he's writing in Isaiah in 700 B.C., shall remain before me. He says, now, at this time, what I'm talking about right now shall remain before me. It's still in the future. He's going to write about the millennial reign. He says, now look, the new heavens and the new earth, they shall remain before me, and I'm going to make them later. But he said, this is what I'm talking about now, the millennial reign, saith the Lord. So shall your seed and your name remain. Now, he's talking about here in the millennial reign, where the Israelis will have children and physical bodies. The children will grow up, and believe it or not, they're going to be saved by grace through faith. If they believe that the God of Israel's Messiah is Jesus Christ, and that he dwells in the temple in Jerusalem, and they will call upon his name for salvation, repenting of their sins, they will be saved by grace through faith. God's plan of salvation has never changed. It has always been by grace through faith. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another. Now, this is the millennial reign. The moon is still here. The sun is still here. And from one Sabbath to another, and they will go back to the temple form of sacrifice, but it will be memorial, not something looking forward to the Messiah coming, not something picturing the Messiah coming, not something picturing the shed blood that he shed, but something looking back on everything that has happened up to that time, which will include the church age in which we live. And notice, he says, shall all flesh come to worship before me. There will not be any flesh in the new heavens and the new earth. That's way down the line. We've got to go through this 1,000 years. All the people on the earth in flesh will be worshiping. Now, there are two things that I can guarantee you are true. All flesh on the earth will come to worshiping. The Bible indicates in Zechariah they will all be required at least to send representatives to worship him. They will have to come up from all nations on the earth to Jerusalem to worship him. They're in flesh and blood bodies. That's a fact. There will be a physical kingdom here. This same kingdom in which I live, made out of wood and iron, plastic, and it's going to be devastating. The millennial reign, the early stages of it, are going to be a tremendous time of rebuilding. Israel is going to be the predominant and strongest nation on the earth, and all nations will have to come up to Jerusalem once a year at the Feast of Tabernacles to worship before me. So I know there has to be a flesh and blood kingdom here. I won't be a part of that. And as I pointed out so many times, in this room, there are angelic beings. You can't see them, but they're made of a substance. It's not hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen. It's not the things on a periodic chemistry chart. It's not the things that you can see like this. But believe me, they're real to one another, and it's a very real kingdom. It's a parallel kingdom on the other side of this flesh. All the devil's angels and the devil will be put in the bottomless pit. All that will be on this earth are men and women in flesh and blood bodies just like ours who still have their carnal natures. But I know that's true. The Bible teaches it. But I also know the Bible teaches that we will be here on this earth with Jesus Christ and that he will be King of kings, Lord of lords, and that he will rule and reign in Jerusalem. He will rule over two kingdoms, a physical kingdom like the one we live in now. The devil and his angels will be in the bottomless pit, so we won't have to wrestle against anything except our own flesh and blood without any help from the devil to sin. It'll still be a struggle. It'll still be a battle, but it'll be easier, I believe. In any case, we'll be here in spiritual bodies like the angels. God's going to use us. What are we going to do? Well, this is a pretty big earth. We're going to be all over the place. We're going to be doing things. Now, I'm speculating here, so let me use the word twice. Speculate. I admit it's speculation. It's not speculation in this sense. The Bible says in the second chapter of Revelation, in the last chapter about overcomers, indicating that the more you overcome the flesh, the more you learn to let God transform your way of thinking, the more your soul responds to your spirit, the more you grow closer to God and withdraw from the ways of the world and sin, the more spiritual growth you have when you're going to be given a better job in heaven. And it indicates that we're the rods of iron. Okay, what do the rods of iron do? They're used to govern. Now, an angel can see me right now. There are angels all over the place, and they can see me. The Bible indicates that I have guardian angels. And that from the time I was a child there, particularly as a child, that their face was always before God. Like God's face here, their face turned to God, and they're watching over me here. So I believe that God will use us, and there may be a situation. Now here comes the speculation. Up to this point, it's not speculation. He's going to use us. Now this is speculation. There may be something going on in Tucumcari, New Mexico, and the Spirit of God, being omnipresent, knows all about it. And a group of men and women over there are starting to do things that are completely contrary to the will of God, violently contrary. Could the Holy Spirit straighten it out himself immediately? Certainly. But it seems to me that God has used us when we're not needed. So we can give him honor and glory, and he, out of his love, can bless us for the work that we're used to do for him, even though he didn't need us to do it. I think he'll send us, and he'll send us, and he'll say, this particular area here, this particular people, they're doing this. I want you to go there, and I want you to stop it. Now, I'll be in a glorified body, and I'll be not all-knowing, but I'll know what God wants. And I'll go there. And by his power, by his wisdom, I'll be used to stop it. God wouldn't need me to do it, but I'll get great joy and satisfaction out of doing it. It's a job. It's a responsibility. Even in our carnal flesh, we have got to be productive. We have got to feel that we're useful. We have got to feel that we're good for something. And if we don't, we're absolutely miserable. In heaven, he'll give us a job, and we'll do it. And we'll do it for 1,000 years, and our joy will be in doing what God said. I can't wait. I get the impression the initial stage, we'll be just jumping around like a bunch of calves, and just enjoying it, and just looking around, and talking to people that are there, and just like a bunch of calves, jumping around out in the pasture. But then we'll settle down, and the Lord will start to teach us things that, quite frankly, possibly we could have learned here, but we had other things that were more important, and we simply didn't learn them. Shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord. And they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. Now here we are in the millennial, in the physical kingdom. He's talking about flesh. Okay, what happens back up here in Malachi? You shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes on the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith the Lord of hosts. We're in the early stages of the millennial reign. And it's talking about those that are still in the flesh. Now we'll see these also, but we'll be in a different kingdom. Those people in bodies of flesh in the kingdom, just like we can't see the angels over there, I don't think they'll be able to see us. I have to put two things together. We're going to be on this earth in spiritual bodies. They're going to be on this earth in physical bodies. That's what I believe it's going to be, just like it is now, except over there in the spiritual kingdom where we are, the devil and all his angels will have been cast in the bottomless pit, and our kingdom will be a perfect kingdom without sin. But in the physical kingdom that we're watching, sin will still exist in the flesh. And they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. Those are the ashes under the soles of the feet that Malachi wrote about. And this is going to be a constant reminder. These people in bodies of flesh, just like us, we have short-term memories. And when God teaches us something, sometimes we tend to forget. And we go right back into our same old ways. So these carcasses that are going to be laying out there, and they'll be all over Israel, they're going to get to see it. And their worm shall not die. What does that mean? Neither shall their fire be quenched. When they see a body out there, a skeleton lying there, they see the carcass, they're going to know that their soul, that's their worm, that's what they refer to here, that their soul shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched. They're in hell, and they're burning in hell. And every time they see a carcass, these people that are still here in bodies of flesh in the millennial kingdom, that's going to be a really great incentive to worship God, to believe in the Messiah, and to believe the word that is preached concerning his location in the temple. And they shall be an abhorring unto all flesh. As the people look upon them, it'll be an abhorrence, because a carcass to an Israeli means unclean. Now, it is now. What time you got, anime? 15 till. I sure would like to continue, but anime, why didn't you lie and tell them it was 20 till? But no, quite frankly, my legs are hurting and I've run out of soap just about. So this concludes the 89th Psalm. And we'll finish that tape off and everything's fine, and I'll let you all go have some coffee.